Welcome to Notes from the Western Edge, a monthly on-demand webcast featuring musicians who create on the edges of jazz, new music, electronics, and a broad expanse of sonic spaces in between. In program number 4, you'll hear from the Grammy Award-winning composer Maria Schneider and from the violinist and composer Jenny Scheinman. This is the month the interviews almost didn't happen. If it weren't for that pesky snowstorm that kept Maria Schneider in L.A. for an extra day in February, I wouldn't have had the opportunity to speak with her while the weather cleared out east. And speaking of out east, in January, I was scheduled to interview Jenny Scheinman while I was in New York City for the International Association for Jazz Education Conference. A last-minute recording session for Scheinman meant that we would have to wait until she played the Skirball Center in L.A. in February. Luckily, it all worked out. Each of this month's featured artists has a remarkable story to tell of her journey from off-the-beaten-path small-town America to the urban canyons in New York City and beyond. Piano lessons with a flamboyant and fantastic piano teacher in the southwestern corner of Minnesota started Maria Schneider on her way to worldwide acclaim as one of today's foremost composers of large ensemble jazz. Working as Gil Evans' right-hand woman didn't hurt either, as she found her own compositional voice. As a child, Jenny Scheinman carried her violin down to the campfire from her house, which just happens to be the westernmost house in the continental United States, nestled at the ocean end of a small river valley in Northern California. Her current home in New York City is at the opposite end of the country and is her launch pad for gigs all over the world, with her own groups and as a member of bands led by Bill Frisell, Madeline Peyrou, Vinicius Cantuaria, and many others. I hope you enjoy the show. On a cloudy, windy day in Rio de Janeiro, Maria Schneider had a hang gliding experience she'll never forget.
I was so freaking out. I was like hanging, my knuckles were just white hanging onto this bar. And the kid said to me, "That bar's not going to help you, you know?" And he said, "Why don't you just let go?" And
she did let go. And what happened next inspired the music you're hearing right now, Hang Gliding, from her third CD, Allegresse.
So I let go, and you're just hanging from this harness and just floating in the air on this invisible sphere of support. And it was just so extraordinary. And then eventually, when you pull that bar, you start diving along cliffs, and the whole scenery of Rio is just so spectacular. You know, the trees, the favelas, and then the rich neighborhoods, and the skyscrapers along the beach, and then we land, and then over the ocean, then we landed on the beach. And also, as we were diving around, too, the sun started coming. So by the time we landed, all the clouds were gone, and the sun opened up.
As so often happens to Schneider, memories of significant events in her life emerge into her music without any conscious effort on her part.
So I came back to New York, and I wasn't trying to write it. Somebody joked with me, "Oh, you're going to write a piece about this." And I didn't think about it, but I came home and I started writing something. All of a sudden I was like, "Oh my God, this is hang gliding."
Maria Schneider has come a very long way from her childhood home in Windom, a town of 4,500 people in the southwestern corner of Minnesota. She's been commissioned to compose for jazz at Lincoln Center and the Carnegie Hall Jazz Orchestra, and her music for the Palabolas Dance Company was performed at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. But most importantly, tours with her own big band, the Maria Schneider Orchestra, have carried her music to an audience far and wide, from all across the U.S. and Europe to Brazil and the Southeast Asian country of Macau. And it all started with a strange twist of fate that led to piano lessons from an exceptional and quite flamboyant teacher back in Windom.
I was a piano player starting at age 5, and I had this great piano teacher who had been a stride pianist in Chicago. And her name was Evelyn Butler, and she moved to Windom from Chicago because her son and her husband both died within a month of each other, and her only living family was a daughter that had married a chiropractor that lived in Windom. And Windom is far from any big city. It's really very rural. It's 3 hours from Minneapolis. And so to have this woman who was this extraordinary stride pianist move to Wyndham was weird. And she was the kind of person, she'd wear these big, like, purple muumuus and green slippers and rhinestone studded glasses. I mean, she was just like out, you know, red hair, very vivacious. And I was just like, I was so taken with the personality in her music. It was so intense. She was really good.
Stride is a style of solo jazz piano originated by Lucky Roberts and James P. Johnson around 1919 in Harlem. It's called stride because the rhythmic and harmonic foundations of the music come from the left hand, which leaps or strides from bass notes at the far end of the keyboard to chords near the middle. All of this while the right hand plays chords and melodies in the upper half of the keyboard. Stride is extremely difficult to play well, but it's not all that Schneider learned.
She taught me stride, like simple stride, and so we worked out of fake books and stuff, and then taught me classical music, but made me learn to analyze all my pieces, taught me theory. So I got a really good music education. Mostly she taught me how to love music so much, you know, and to love Cole Porter as much as I loved Chopin or Bach or Mozart. There were no judgments about music. I could play any kind of standard or pop song, and she saw it as beautiful. And she encouraged me to write songs and things, so I did that.
From Wyndham, Schneider moved on to music studies at the University of Minnesota, followed by grad school at the University of Miami and the Eastman School of Music. She speaks very highly of her teachers and all that they taught her, but she also says,
ultimately, I mostly learned, for all this education I had, I kind of learned on my own. Because I didn't come up through a jazz program that said, okay, here's step one to write, step two, step three. I learned by just kind of flailing and trying things and experimenting, grabbing a lesson here and there. And I think it was good because I think I developed my own naive way of doing things, which enabled me to have my own voice.
Arriving in New York City in 1985, after her formal schooling was completed, she took a day job as a music copyist, which in another twist of fate led to her work with the legendary icon of large ensemble jazz, Gil Evans. But way before fate took its turn, Schneider had once tried to reach Evans while still a student at Eastman.
I called information in New York City and dialed him. I was really nervous to see if he'd teach me. And when the phone picked up, it was an answering machine, and it said, if you wish to speak to Gil or Miles, speak after the beep. And that was beep, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so out of my league, and I hung up the phone.
Schneider got another chance when Tom Pearson, a jazz composer who came into the shop where she was working, asked her what kind of music she liked.
I said that I really love Gil Evans, and I was telling him all the things I love about Gil Evans. And he didn't say anything, but then he called me that night, and he said, I didn't tell you today, but Gil happens to be my closest friend, and I told him about you, he wants to meet you, and he needs somebody to work for him. So that was just like this fortuitous thing, which, by the way, bizarrely, I had sort of seen way back when I was in Minnesota. I had sort of a, you know how sometimes you just have a daydream and you sort of imagine something, you're not forcing it, sort of a scene comes to you. The scene came to me years before of working for Gil in that capacity that I ended up working with him.
Over the next 3 years, Schneider's work with Evans expanded from simple part copying to reorchestrating his arrangements to actually writing arrangements when his workload became too heavy. Most notably, Schneider worked on his orchestrations for the Martin Scorsese film The Color of Money and for the Sting Gil Evans tour in 1987. A major theme in Schneider's music is that of the journey, through time and memory, or through a rich terrain of emotions, or more literally, from one place to another, as in the piece we're hearing right now, Journey Home. Her Concert in the Garden, the title piece of her album which won the 2004 Grammy for Best Large Jazz Ensemble Album, relates to a journey too, one that Octavio Paz speaks of in his poem of the same name. It rained. The hour is an enormous eye. Inside it, we come and go like reflections. The river of music enters my blood. If I say body, it answers wind. If I say earth, it answers where. The world, a double blossom opens. Sadness of having come, joy of being here. I walk, lost in my own center. In her liner notes, Schneider relates that composing Concert in the Garden brought her to memories of her father's tiny hunting cabin in southwestern Minnesota. She writes, "I could sit in that little treehouse for hours with binoculars, peering at birds, yellow-headed blackbirds, swallows, great blue herons, red-winged blackbirds, soras. There I'd sit, breathing in tandem with the wind that would sweep the bay below, pulling the willows and the cattails along in powerful surges. I'd be lost in that world as we became one." Another major theme in Schneider's music is that of dance and the rhythms that propel it, especially the rhythms of Latin America, which she heard firsthand in New York City and in Brazil. Her fascination with these rhythms redirected the rhythmic focus of her music away from the swing of her earlier work.
Well, I went to Brazil and I started hearing Brazilian music and harmonies and rhythms. Even before that, I went to a Paco de Lucia concert at Lincoln Center, and I fell in love with bolero rhythms, the polyrhythms, the 12-8. I just started to find those rhythms to be much more interesting, because when you have things that are in 12-8, you can have groupings of four and of three. It's like Landó in Peru. That's in six. So if you are in six, you have 12 eighth notes. That means you can start one, two, three, four, five, six. You can put three over the top. Da, ga, 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 ga. That's coming out of Africa. That's Afro-Peruvian music. That is flamenco music. The 12-8 of the boleria, the soleá. Then in Brazilian music, there's something else going, but it's the two feel, the dum, ba-dum, ga-dum. And it's the feeling that swing has of that there aren't even sixteenths and there aren't triplets, but there's something somewhere in between. And samba has that, and even Landó has that, where they stretch things a little bit, and then swing, of course, has that. Those things are all coming out of Africa.
When I heard Schneider and her orchestra at Disney Hall in early 2006, I was mesmerized by the way she conducts her band, swaying from side to side to the rhythms, gliding from one side of the band to the other as she coaxes nuances out of her players. I was surprised when she told me that, contrary to written reports, she never trained as a dancer. Nevertheless, dance is a very important part of her compositional process.
When I write my pieces, the way I figure out the form of my pieces is by dancing. So there's a very strong dance element in my pieces. Also, I was largely inspired to become a composer through dance. I went to an American Ballet concert at Northrop Auditorium in Minneapolis, and they did Fancy Free. And I saw Leonard Bernstein, and I just heard that music coming out of the pit and the dancers, you know, just like flying through the air, and I was like, man, I want to write music that makes people dance.
Whatever the source of her inspiration, daydreams, premonitions, hang gliding in Rio, memories of breathing with nature surrounded by willows and cattails, the rhythms of Africa as filtered through Latin American dance. Maria Schneider's music continues to express the arrivals, the destinations, all the passages of her life journey. From Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Thelonious Monk Quartet with John Coltrane at Carnegie Hall, Charles Lloyd's Jumping the Creek, Jenny Scheinman's 12 Songs. What do these names have in common? All of them appeared on Ben Ratliff's New York Times list of 2005's Best Albums and Songs. Here's what Ratliff had to say about Scheinman's release on Cryptogramophone. She's a musician with soul. She can kill you with just tone and feeling in four bars of a Gershwin ballad, which she does regularly at Barbès in Brooklyn. But 12 Songs shows Ms. Scheinman at her best as a composer, seeking out new world styles from blues to jazz to country to calypso, and neatly connecting them. I couldn't agree more, and I'm sure that the character behind the title of this song would concur. The frog threw his head back and laughed. Jenny Scheinman's musical odyssey has taken her to the clubs and concert halls of New York City and beyond from a decidedly non-traditional upbringing.
I grew up in the middle of nowhere, and I had parents that were very musical and also, you know, serious jokesters. They serenaded members of the community at midnight all the time. They were constantly throwing together little theatrical, musical, you know, performances. My mother, you know, grew up playing classical piano. They're both from New York and moved out to this little tiny town in California. My dad is a folk musician, basically. He knows 10 million songs. He still pulls out songs that he learned a long time ago that I've never heard him sing. We lived outside in the summer. You know, we didn't have electricity during the winter anyway, so I guess the difference was that there was a roof in the winter. But we, you know, played a lot of around the campfire.
Back then, Scheinman's main instrument was piano. But because a violin was much easier to carry down to the campfire, she ended up playing a lot of fiddle as well. But her musical horizons were not limited to just the fires burning at home.
I also, you know, went to fiddle festivals with my dad. We took a trip to Europe. And we busked a bit on the street, played on the street. And then in high school, my parents sort of created a little high school in the town, which had four students the first year, and then they decided it wasn't quite enough, so they imported three students from Marin County, one of whom was a wonderful musician. And he influenced me a lot. He would stay over at our house a lot, and pulled out a lot of the jazz records that my dad had since he was a kid, going to the Village Vanguard with his dad. You know, my dad actually has quite a wonderful record collection, jazz record collection, and I really got into that in high school. And some random friend of my family's dropped off a cardboard box full of jazz violin records, and this box disappeared. I don't know who put it there, and I don't even know if I'm possibly making this up, but I can imagine the record covers. Some person noticed my interest at a young age and dropped off a bunch of records.
Scheinman's next step, College at Oberlin, Santa Cruz, and UC Berkeley.
My sole ambition going to college was to be in a band, you know, to be in any kind of band, to be playing any kind of instrument, but just to be in that group on stage making music for people. I really wanted to, and I ended up doing it on violin. Maybe if I had done it on piano, which was actually my main instrument, I would be playing jazz piano now, I don't know.
In 1999, after a few years of gigging in the San Francisco Bay Area, Scheinman moved to New York City, where she immersed herself in the music scene, going out to hear music every night, practicing constantly, and looking for work. Gradually, the work came, with Bill Frisell, Myra Melford, Jim Black, Chris Speed, Nora Jones, and many others. Her regular gig at Barbès in Brooklyn allows her the freedom to try out new musical approaches every week, from duets with banjo players, to Gershwin tunes with piano, bass, and drums, to improvisations on her own compositions with a string quartet. Her album 12 Songs came together just this way. When she put the band together for the 12 Songs project, Scheinman chose six musicians, all of whom she had worked with in the past, but never all together at the same time. She chose players who had more than one musical trait in common.
Everybody in the band is very song-oriented and also very free with improvisation and exploration, and not sort of limited in the way some musicians are that exclusively play songs. So it's sort of a balance between concise lyrical forms with total exploration and dissonance and taking things a little bit beyond the atmosphere, you know.
For 12 songs, Scheinman put herself on a rigid and somewhat brutal schedule.
Often I force myself to write, and I write a bunch of trash, and maybe it's because I do that that a week later, unexpectedly, I'll write a bunch of good stuff. For the 12 Songs record, I made myself write 12 songs a day for a week, you know, not obviously thinking that they would all be good, but what is that? What is 12 times 12?
144.
You know, 144, so I got 12 songs out of 144. That's probably a relatively normal batting average.
Whether it was 12 songs times 12 or 12 songs times 7, that's a whole lot of songs to choose from. The one you're hearing right now is dedicated to guitarist Bill Frisell, known here as Mohawk. As in all jazz, Scheinman's music contains plenty of room for improvising, but in her compositions, she also makes use of fragments or riffs that she calls
little bits. I called them actually little bits that can be inserted at will, or also cued by, but improvisationally cued. Like, you know, Ron Miles could look over at Doug Wieselman and put his fingers up, put two fingers up and say, okay, let's play little bit number two right here. And then he'll lift his cornet, and on the downbeat, they'll play little bit number two. So that's a composed part that's inserted under, say, a long guitar solo or something like that. You know, so there's also, I guess, a balance between sort of improvisation and arrangement. And I let the musicians decide, in many cases, where to place the composed material.
For Scheinman, the little bits in the first take of Mohawk worked out very well. But she also admits that sometimes things might not have such a happy result.
In the version that we use on the album, the little bits, there's tremendous number of little bits. I mean, and there's none of them are overdubbed. They're all, we did it live. I mean, there is no overdubbing on the record. But somehow we were able to insert so many of these little things, and some of the tales of one will merge with another idea that somebody's doing, or, I mean, there's an incredible number of intersections that really work. And it's the reason I used that take. On some of the other takes, that was the very first take. A lot of the record is first takes. And after we did that take, we did a couple other takes and then tried to reinsert some stuff because we were so excited about how the first take came out. We wanted to, you know, so Ron and I went back into the studio and tried to cue each other, tried to listen to what was happening and cue each other, and it totally didn't work. And there were tons of collisions in that. You know, collisions with the soloist, collisions with each other, but our mind sort of unified for the one take that we got that was good.
Good indeed. Good enough to land on the New York Times 2005 best list. For the future, Scheinman's Project Hopper is full. She's releasing an album as a vocalist, singing songs from her childhood that are close to her heart, including some country songs. She has plans for an album that would include a large string section, much like the 20-player section that performed at her CD release party for 12 songs. And she is touring in the fall of 2006 with a string quartet. From the campfires of Northern California to the clubs of New York and the concert halls of Europe, Jenny Scheinman's Odyssey promises many more miles of musical vistas ahead. In Los Angeles, for Notes from the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. Next time we'll hear from two Los Angeles-based musicians, both with releases on Cryptogrammophone, hitting the shelves in May. Saxophonist Benny Maupin is also the player most closely associated with the bass clarinet since Eric Dolphy, from his work in New York with Horace Silver, Lee Morgan, McCoy Tyner, and Miles Davis. Maupin moved west when he was part of Herbie Hancock's groundbreaking Headhunters band. He's been here ever since. Violinist and composer Jeff Gautier is one busy man. Over the past 25 years, he's played with a who's who of LA-based creative musicians, and in his words, on almost every Star Trek film and TV show spinoff known to man. In addition to that, he runs a weekly series of creative music concerts called Kryptonites at Club Tropicale in Culver City, and runs Cryptogrammophone Records as well, which will release a new Jeff Gautier Gotet recording in May. In Los Angeles, for Notes on the Western Edge, I'm Richard Paskey. Until next time, keep listening.